Page 135 on Life of the Messiah, I believe, where we're at, right? Page 135, the authority of the king is being challenged, the testing of the lamb. As we talked about, Jesus is in the four-day period of the testing of the lamb, the Passover lamb, remember? And so Sunday through Wednesday, he's going to be tested by the religious leaders and then declared innocent by Pilate. But we're in on the Tuesday of that testing period. And this is the 12th of Nisan, April 4th, 30 A.D. And so now we're going to see the testing of him with the Pharisees and the Herodians. Very interesting passage, and you know it very well. It says in verse 15, then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. So already it tells you their motivation. They're not there to question him to get answers. They're there to entrap him with their questions, okay? So you have to know the motivation to begin with. Verse 16, and they sent to him their disciples with the Herodians. Well, that's an interesting combination. These are two political parties that don't get along. That's like putting the Republicans with the Democrats. They just don't get along. See, the Pharisees don't believe that Rome has the right to rule over them. The Herodians are quite fine with this as long as the Romans used the house of Herod to rule over Israel. So you have two political factions, and isn't it funny that they're going to team up against the Lord? Teacher, we know that you are true. This is called flattery. And teach the way of God in truth. Nor do you care about anyone. Talking about as far as discerning, he doesn't play favorites. For you do not regard the person of men. It's flattery, but it's true. Now, can you discern if somebody who's telling you the truth about yourself, but is flattering you? That's important to figure out. Be careful about people who flatter you, even though it's the truth, they're flattering you because they want something from you, like they do. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? This is the trap. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Huh, bingo. They think they got him. So here's what the deal is. Here's the background on this. The Pharisees said this is against Torah to pay taxes to Caesar because it's showing that we are submitting to a different authority than Yahweh, and they were totally against paying taxes to Caesar. The Herodians had no problems paying taxes to Caesar, as long as, again, they went through the house of Herod. But they know by asking this question, if he says to pay taxes to Caesar, that the people will turn on him. Because the people can't stand paying taxes to Rome. It would be like you and I paying taxes to the UN. It's imperialism. We're paying taxes to a foreign entity, not even to our own government. And so if he says pay taxes to Caesar, he's going to get the people against him. If he says don't pay taxes to Caesar, guess what legal trouble he's in, right? And that's what they're trying to do, get the people against him or the Roman government against him. Brilliantly answers the question. But Jesus perceived their wickedness. So that flattery is wickedness. Why do you test me, you hypocrites? And he says, show me the tax money. So it says they brought him a denarius. Okay, so this actually took some time, by the way. It wasn't like they were in a group there and someone had a coin with Caesar's face on it, because that was prohibited in the inside of the temple or in the inner courts. Remember the money changers? What were they changing? Okay, so here's the deal. When you went to the temple, the common currency is you had Roman money. Well, they would not accept Roman money in the temple. The sons of Annas were saying you have to change the money into a shekel, Jewish money. And so they had a place where you change your currency. Where were they changing the currency? Right there in the court of the Gentiles, in front of everybody. And that wasn't illegal in the fact that they were changing currency. This is what was illegal. They were extorting the money from the people, saying, if you want a shekel, it's going to be 10 times the amount of a normal shekel. It would be like if a earthquake hit California and you couldn't get gas, but one gas station has gas and he's charging $50 a gallon. Right? That's extortion. That's what they were doing because no one had the ability to change money except them. So they were changing money, making big bucks. It was a big scam. Like the government, you know? And hence that's what they were doing, right? They were the government at that point in time. So basically, when this happens, someone has to be sent off to go get it. So they're just sitting around and waiting for this guy to go out into the court of the Gentiles and get money to bring it back in to where Jesus is. He's not in the court of the Gentiles. He's in the inner part where the Jewish men would be. Okay? That's even past where the women would be. Okay? So they're waiting and waiting and waiting. So there's a lot of drama, a lot of tension building, and the crowds are coming in because we want to hear this answer. Okay. So finally, Simon comes back and brings them the money. Show me the tax money. So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, whose image and inscription is this? Can you imagine him just showing it and holding it up in front of everybody, right? He's holding it up, and on the picture is Caesar, right? You know that. They said to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, and you know this very well, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. You know that phrase very well. We'll unpack it in just a second. When they had heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. He just shut them completely down. They didn't know how to answer him back. Brilliant. Took care of them. No problem. Okay, let's unpack that word that he said, render unto Caesar's the things that are Caesar's. Okay, what does that mean? What did he just legitimize? Pay your taxes. Hence, this gave the Pharisees fuel to argue against, not Pharisees, the Herodians fuel to argue against the Pharisees. The Pharisees were wrong. Because they were saying to everybody in synagogue, do not pay taxes to Rome. So they were wrong. In essence, what Jesus is saying, which is already what you already know from the New Testament, is all authority shall be obeyed. Now, they should have already known this, and I want you to see this passage. It's in the next page, on page 136. It's Daniel 4:17. Now, when you read this, you're going to have a bittersweet thing going on in your stomach after this, okay? You ready for this? I don't think you are. I'm going to send you home with a bad taste in your mouth. This is what they should have already known about paying taxes to Caesar. The Pharisees should have known this. Daniel 4. The decision, and this comes in a poem form in Daniel, the decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones. In order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. Now, that's in Daniel. It's in poetic form. But what it's saying in Daniel is that Yahweh sets up his authority in governments and kings as he sees fit. Do you see where the bitterness is in that? So if Hillary's your next president, and I've said this to you guys before, if Hillary gets in there, what do you think God is saying to America? Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I'll give you what you want. You want Saul? You can have Saul. Or Saul-less. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I'm not saying not vote. You got to go out and vote. You gotta do that, because God works and he knows the free will of humans, and that's part of his plan. So you gotta go vote. So don't say, I'm gonna be a hyper-Calvinist all of a sudden. Don't do that. Go out and vote and do your thing. But at the end of the day, even after you vote, God's will be done, and whoever is in that White House will be what Daniel 4 just stated. I'm the one who did this. Now, when you see someone that's antithetical to God, what you should always understand from the Old Testament is that when he put those people in place, he did it as a judgment to the nation. And there for too long have we been messing around with God And I don't expect really anything to come good out of this next election, because the path we are on, the people in our country are so ungodly. And I'm not thinking I'm better than them. I mean, they don't want to have anything to do with God. They have dismantled the whole system to kick him out. Well, God says, fine. You don't want Samuel to be a judge, and you want a king like the rest of the world, right? You don't want me as your king. Samuel, don't take it personally. It's me they don't want. But I'm going to give him Saul. Thank you. Okay, so the point that Jesus was making is, you Pharisees apparently don't read the Bible. Because if you would have known Daniel, you know that God puts people in positions that Rome is predicted to be over you. And if they would have read Daniel, what were the four empires? Remember? And that's what Daniel predicted, that Rome would be over Israel at this time of the Messiah. And that's exactly what happened. So they should actually see this as prophecy. But here's the point. Let me ask you this. I said this to my staff yesterday. The Pharisees had the entire Old Testament memorized, man. All of it memorized. Could just sit there and repeat it word for word. Go for it. Start. Genesis 1. Boom. And just keep going. 39 books in their head. They don't remember that? It's intellectual awanas, but never, the awanas never got to their heart. It never applied to anything. They never made connections. They never made connected dots. They never saw what it was, and they missed it. And they put their own lens on scripture, so they memorized things. But, okay, when the Mormon memorizes scripture, what is he doing? He's memorizing scripture through a filter. When the Catholic memorizes scripture, they memorize it through a filter. They just won't take it for what it says. They're pouring in the stuff there. And so the Pharisees, that's what they were doing. So that's why they couldn't even understand that you're supposed to pay taxes to the governmental authorities. They couldn't even get that. Okay, so to clear that up, Jesus puts them on their heels saying, you're basically wrong, the Herodians are right. Settles the debate there. And then he says, and to God what the things that are God's. That's the phrase that gets forgotten. No one remembers that phrase. But what does he mean? We understand he's talking about taxes, but what did the other phrase mean? What's Caesar's and what's God? Caesar, I had the money, pay your taxes to Caesar. But you render unto God what is God's. Obedience? Mm-hmm. Your lives. The things that are God, are God's, his ownership, is you. That's his point. It's you. You give to Caesar, pay your taxes, but the rest of you belongs to God. All of you belongs to God. And you give it, you give that to God. That was his admonition. There's actually in that phrase, the gospel. Give yourself to God. You have to surrender yourself to God in order to be saved. You have to admit you're a sinner. You have to give yourself over. You have to be humble. And so in, even in that phrase is a hint of the gospel. Give God what is his. So he created us by definition because he's our creator. He owns us, but yet he gives us our free will to make the decision if we want to be his and become a child. And therefore, the right obligation is you give yourself back to your creator. That's what he's trying to say. So there's a salvation point in that. And most people don't pick up on that. So anyway, with that being said, then let's go to the next one. Oh, wait, we're done. We ran out of time. All right. Yikes. I don't want to start something new before we get going on that. Before we go, here's your homework. The homework is this. When in this next passage, why does he quote from Moses an incident with a burning bush to prove the resurrection to the Sadducees? He actually uses the burning bush incident. Because I want you to look at the burning bush incident and think about the burning bush incident and ask yourselves, where in there is the resurrection? In the burning bush. That's perplexing. It didn't burn up. Think about that. Think about the burning bush incident, and in the burning bush incident, there's a message of resurrection in it. And most people don't see it. It goes right over their head. Have you ever thought about that? No. It's there. It's there. It's in plain view. It's in total plain view. It's not something like you just blindly believe. It's there. I'm dead serious. I'll show you next week. It's dead serious. The burning bush incident speaks of the resurrection. Blow you away once you get the answer, all right? If you get it before then, email me or text me and say, I found it. It's there. No one sees it.